The challenge of reducing Australia's greenhouse gas emissions without unduly harming job prospects or the broader economy is one that Ms Gillard's predecessor tried and failed to deliver on. And the coalition leader Tony Abbott has made it clear he will fight the carbon tax with everything he's got. So will the legislation work to reduce Australia's greenhouse gas emissions? How will it affect the economy? How will it affect you? And will it survive the next election? We'll have reaction and analysis from a panel of experts and interest groups. Here with me now in the studio is the ABC's economics correspondent Stephen Long and Chief Political Correspondent Sabra Lane. Sabra, we heard the Prime Minister and her other ministers there saying that this was an important, a fundamental, a courageous reform. How critical is it for the government that it wins support not just from the Parliament but from the public?
It's absolutely critical. If you recall, recent opinion polls show that the popularity for both the government and the Prime Minister have tanked. Their primary vote is down to 27%. A lot of people now do not trust Julia Gillard, and that's essentially come through from her promise just before the last election. She said that there would be no carbon tax under a government she led. She's tried to explain the circumstances how she's changed her mind, but it's absolutely crucial now that she sells this to the public and also to industry as to why this is necessary.
So what do you make of the sales job from this press conference so far?
Them are fighting words. I mean, we heard her say that she's moving now from words to deeds. This will be legislated this year. We will get this done. Echoing the words yesterday to the Labor conference in Sydney, she's now got her boxing gloves on and she's prepared to take on Tony Abbott. Now that she's released all these figures, she can start to do that.
So, Sabra, take us through the key points of this policy. How different is it from the carbon policy that Kevin Rudd tried to get through and failed to get through the Parliament?
Well, a lot of it is actually quite the same. A lot of the measures that are given for industry are virtually carbon copies, you could say, of the old CPRS scheme. The difference, though, this time is that petrol for householders is out. Under the old scheme, it was in. So there'll be questions here as to why the Greens have agreed to this, because many could argue that this current scheme is, in fact, weaker than the one that was originally proposed.
One of the issues for the Greens last time was the emissions target. Have the Greens won any concessions on that?
They have indeed, and that's one of the major differences that hasn't been leaked out prior to today. A lot of the detail that we've got here has already been in the papers this week. But crucially, the target now for 2050 is up to 80%, and the government originally promised that the target would be 60%. So the Greens will no doubt argue that they've had some concession there, that they've forced the government into taking a tougher stance on that.
When you look at this package, you were looking through it this morning, did you see where the government compromised to accommodate the three independents? Their votes are, of course, critical to getting this legislation through the Parliament?
Yes, we've got some packages for regional assistance. There's a $200 million for a regional structural assistance package. Of course, a lot of the money set aside in the coal sector jobs package, a lot of those coal mines are in regional areas. So that's $1.3 billion there too. And of course, the carbon farming initiative. While agriculture has been excluded from the scheme, there'll be things that farmers can do to gain credits, you know, for trees that they plant, for better tillage methods. That they will also be rewarded there as well. So, yes, there are elements there where regional Australia has been brought on. But also, crucially, we see, and they talked about that in that at the press conference that we heard there, the coal sector jobs package, the steel transformation package. They didn't get the Greens across the line over that on the multi-party climate change committee, and the government signalling they're going to be government measures that they get on and do. And specifically, we heard that Greg Combe say that steel transformation package, even though technically it doesn't have to go into Parliament, they are going to legislate that in Parliament because they're going to try and wedge Tony Abbott on that. Does he support steel jobs? They'll want to see how the coalition votes on that.
Now, those details there were in one of the final little sort of financial tables of the package that we got this morning. It's interesting looking at the table on the budget on that very last page that the carbon tax will hit the budget surplus for all of the forward years except the election year of 2013. Curious, that, isn't it?
That's right. And that will fulfil her Julia Gillard's pledge that she said that surplus is absolutely protected. There is no way that she's going to be torn away from that surplus at all. But that in those measures, all that fiscal table, they promised that this scheme would be revenue neutral, and that table shows that no, it's not. But they're going to make those measures up through in getting rid of some of the tax credits for heavy fuel, making them pay so they'll make up the costs and the shortfalls in that way.
Let's go now to our economics correspondent, Stephen Long. Stephen, will this be effective in transforming Australia's economy and reducing carbon emissions, or are there too many exclusions?
I think the answer, Eleanor, is yes and yes. Yes, it will be effective in transforming the economy and reducing emissions, and yes, there are too many exclusions. In an economist's ideal world, you would have no exclusions. You would force any activity that actually creates pollution in the form of carbon emissions to pay for the cost of the pollution, rather than indirectly forcing those costs onto society and the environment. But we don't live in an ideal world, and clearly the government had to look at what was politically tenable, the exclusion of petrol, for example, for households and small business, and differential rates for different industries in terms of the compensation they get. But clearly, on all the Treasury modelling, which is very credible, we are still going to see strong jobs growth, but there's going to be a shift of labour, capital and consumption away from high emissions sectors towards more efficient emissions sectors.
So does this policy then hit the key polluters?
Well, it does, but there's significant compensation. For example, if you look at the coal industry, $1.3 billion in compensation. Now that is equivalent to about $32,000 in compensation per worker in the industry. So effectively about a third of the cost of each coal worker is being compensated for in the package. Now clearly that's being structured so that the mines that produce the most gassy emissions have an incentive to reduce those emissions. If you look at it, though, in the scheme of things, that the costs to industry are pretty small, even for the high polluting industries, compared to the profits that they're making from the activity. Now, the spot price for the coking coal used in steel making is about $330 to $40 a tonne at the moment. On Friday, I checked, and the spot price for the steaming coal used in electricity generation was $122 a tonne. It's been as high as $140.
So, and is
we're
this
talking
compensation
about an effective rate of about $2 a tonne after the compensation? So
the price is 23, but in the coal industry, it's two.
Well, these are the figures that the minister cited this morning, but what he's saying, if you take into account the compensation, the actual impact is small. And put that in the context of the profits, BHP Billiton's most recent earnings were about $25 billion a year, and Rio Tinto's about $22 billion. I don't think that we're going to destroy our major companies or industries through this.
Well, the steel industry had been making several demands too. Did one steel get what it wanted?
It certainly did. You're looking at about 94.5% of the costs for the smelting and aluminium smelting and steel industries being recouped, plus this $300 million in compensation. So, in effect, they're being treated like low-income households. They're getting the full costs plus. And that might seem distorting and wrong, but there is a valid argument to say that we do need to produce steel to... There's not really an alternative for much production at the moment, and we might otherwise have to be importing that steel from areas where they have less controls and are doing less to move towards a carbon price. So you can see a logic to it.
The government is stressing that this tax only applies to about 500 companies. Does that mean that there will be no impact on other companies?
Certainly not. There will be an impact far more widely. You can imagine, for instance, the small or medium enterprise, say a cheesemaker that's making cheese and then having to reduce, say, milk into powder for export, all highly energy intensive. They're going into a market where basically they only make a small profit margin and they haven't got much chance to pass on the costs. Well, it will hit their profits, but that's part of it. It's designed to make them find more efficient ways of doing business, and the government has outlined substantial compensation for industry, including manufacturing, to look at alternative ways of doing things that reduce their emissions.